Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the union label.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan Show. Here he is, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist host in the country, Alan Nathan.
Welcome aboard, everybody. Welcome aboard. I'm ever yours, Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. Once again, this is the Oasis for those who have an aversion to the left, right, black, white, two-dimensional approach. Absolutely delighted you could be with us. If this is your virgin voyage, allow me to share with you our mantra. Folks, we want the Republicans out of our bedroom, the Democrats out of our wallets, and both out of our First and Second Amendment rights. We feel there exists this cavernous gap separating the two orthodoxies, and that it's a gap comprised of many degree-thinking people who can argue quite passionately in shades of gray. And to that end, each and every show we have fine guests to help best illustrate this point. Today is no exception. Also, if you wish to hook up with us on the web, it's www.alannathan.com. Don't forget that email address, alan@alannathan.com. That's A-L-A-N. Coming at you live and strong each and every Monday through Friday at this time. Don't forget the classic Alan Nathan Show, Saturdays, 6 to 7 p.m. And overnight Sunday mornings, 3 to 4, all times Eastern. We are indeed a Main Street Radio Network production. Please check us out at mainstreetradionetwork.com. Feel free to avail yourselves of our nascent but always robust Twitter and Facebook options that we have there for you. And, of course, with great dispatch and alacrity, we love to thank our distributor, the Salem Radio Network. That's right, the Alan Nathan Show is entering its 28th year of national syndication, all thanks to you, reaching about 800 towns and cities across a couple of hundred radio station broadcasts each week. Again, all thanks to you. And, by the way, I don't care if you're part of the authoritarian left or perpetually clueless right. Please get out of the thought control business. Also want to give a quick shout out to my many, many stations who've been taking us over 2.5 decades. And, of course, all these podcast networks picking us up. Listen Notes, Amazon Music, Amazon Music UK, Amazon Music India, Italy, you name it, it's happening. Also, thank you to Apple as well as Spotify. And, of course, CRN Talk has been taking us for many, many years. CRNTalk.com, a radio network unto themselves. You can check us out on their Channel 4 as well as get us across Roku. They pass us on through Roku as well. So, again, thank you to everybody, but most assuredly to my audience, because without you guys, none of the rest is possible. Our topics du jour, as you may have heard, well, we're covering the humiliating international spanking of legacy media's attempt to play down the significant damage we visited upon Iran's nuclear program. You got to wonder, though, can their rapidly sinking credibility plausibly reach lower depths without the aid of oil drilling equipment? I don't think it's possible. Also, Trump succeeds at the NATO summit wherein he secured an agreement from all sides, all allies, except Spain, to contribute 5% of their yearly GDP instead of the earlier 2%, which he himself had secured in his first term. Obama couldn't do it, but he did it. All this, of course, against the backdrop of the Secretary General acknowledging that America's bombings in Iran, quote-unquote, makes us all safer. What's next? I tell you, it's just astonishing to witness what we have going on, because CNN, Washington Post, and MSNBC, they're still citing this low-confidence intel source claiming that Iran's nuclear program was, quote-unquote, set back only months, not years. And this is despite so many powerful sources to the contrary disabusing them of this. But anyway, what are you going to do? I guess we have to just analyze it, as we often shall. Assisting in the opining and analyzing, old friend of the show, John Gordon, national political analyst and host of the syndicated radio show The Truth with John Gordon. In 2022, Trump endorsed him in his candidacy for Georgia's attorney general. John, good to have you on board. How are you today?
Thank you. It's good to be back with you.
Good to have you. Your take on this disconnect between what so many in credible positions are saying over the efficacy of our bombing in Iraq versus legacy media's preferred telling of the event?
I don't get it. I mean, why they continue to dig their own grave is beyond me. You know, they've lost so much credibility. And I did you see the New York Times hit piece on Elon Musk a couple of weeks ago? May have been 3 weeks by now. But they accused him of being an habitual drug user, someone who partook of ketamine, ecstasy, and mushrooms. And I just asked the question rhetorically, how could someone work so hard and accomplish so much while on recreational drugs every day of their life, as this article led you to believe? And, oh, you know, the fact of the matter is just a propaganda from somebody that wanted to get Elon out of government. And I guess to some extent, they have to be congratulated because they accomplished the goal.
Well, no, they didn't. Don't give him that credibility. He had to leave in 130 days anyway. He was in there in a very specific category of being an assistant without any kind of extended contract. There's a category in which he fell where he could only work in the capacity he had been working for 130 days before leaving.
Why don't you just change your status from an employee to a volunteer? I mean, there would have been very little logistical issues if he wanted to stay, I think.
Yeah, I don't think he did want to stay. I think he really wanted to do what he did and then get out and get back to business, because he's got one or two over which to to give it his attention. I think he did a phenomenal job while he was there, saving billions and billions and billions of dollars from continued waste and fraud, getting rid of excess, unnecessary bureaucrats. That's all to the advantage of our treasury at a time when we need to offset deficits as much as possible. Nobody's going to really, with any credibility, be able to characterize him as having been anything but a phenomenal plus to our nation's fiscal health, without a doubt. And now
get an argument here.
Yeah, well, he exposed so much, and that's what the Democrats were upset about. They did not like their skeletons being revealed. They did not like people finding out about the imbecilic destinations of so many of our billions of dollars. They didn't like the public finding out that billions and billions of dollars were not traceable after having been distributed by the Treasury, that there were not the appropriate codes attached that should have been all along. And now there are. That has been reinstituted. But the bottom line is we had so many expenditures that were addressed by Elon Musk, which beforehand had not been the case, that, you know, even though we haven't gotten it all back, one thing we have ensured is that from this point on, there will no longer be this kind of replication of egregious spending without identity. They were just they fired off so many billions of dollars without a sense of their destination, that the bottom line is it becomes impossible to do any kind of audit when you have all that spending concealed, as had been the case. The Democrats didn't want that. They have this proclivity for characterizing our expectation for their accountability as somehow always being more inappropriate than their dodging of it. Would you not agree, John?
I agree with everything you just said. I mean, you mean like $2 billion that was given to Stacey Abrams and she bought 88,000 or 8,800 microwaves for it? That's all she's got to show for it? I mean, it's just it would be laughable if it weren't so detrimental to our country and our national treasury.
No, without a doubt, without a doubt. Listen, I want to shift gears a little bit because you wanted to chat with us about this judge defying the Supreme Court as it relates to illegal immigration. Now, give us some more on this.
Well, the activist judges in America have been fighting Trump at every opportunity that they have to stop and slow down his agenda. It's just that simple. And the problem is that they're virtually untouchable. We make them, the forefathers made them untouchable because we wanted them to be free from corruption. But unfortunately, that has become an enabler for judges that want to assert their own influence and usurp the power of the presidency. It's nothing less than that. And the judges are not elected. They're appointed. And then they are not. It's really hard to get rid of them. And so,
but you know what? There is a check. This is what I always like to let people know, because contrary to popular understanding, the judiciary is never the final arbiter over whether or not it has usurped another branch's separated powers. And that's what we've got going on right now. See, every president has the unassailable, even though sometimes perilous, constitutional option to use the functionality and mechanics of his branch's separated powers to actually leverage his check against what he believes to be an unconstitutional encroachment upon those powers by any component of the judiciary. And by the way, he can do this even as the dispute makes its way through the appellate process. And this is provably the case because, fortunately, our founding fathers ensured that the judiciary would never be allowed to enforce its own rulings. That's why I assure you, my friend, the judiciary and all the courts that comprise it are not untouchable. They are very touchable. And the president has this check. If you can, hang on the line for just a moment, folks. You're listening to The Alan Nathan Show right here on the Main Street Radio Network. Stick with us.
It's no surprise that people love their pets. In fact, 97% of pet owners consider them part of the family. Amazon's Jen Ray has more.
Amazon Pet Day makes caring for your pets easier than ever. The 48-hour sales event features thousands of deals with the convenience of Amazon's fast delivery. Whether you're welcoming a new puppy, upgrading essentials for a senior pet, or looking for products that pamper, there's something for everyone.
Nearly two-thirds of U.S. households have a pet. That's 86.9 million homes.
With so many households having pets, Amazon has something for every pet owner and their furry friends, from trusted basics to exciting new favorites across price points. Plus, Amazon is expanding its pet care offerings, now providing prescription pet medications on Amazon.com through VetSource, a leading pet pharmacy.
On May 13th and 14th, Amazon Pet Day will offer incredible deals, including on our most popular and pet-approved brands, like Purina Pro Plan, Iams, PetSafe, O. Norman, Ring, and more. Learn more at Amazon.com/Pet Day. As the school year winds down, many high school students are thinking ahead to what comes next. For some, that means staying academically engaged over the summer and preparing for the transition to college. Shauna Thayer, CEO of the online education platform Sophia Learning, has more.
Sophia Learning offers college-level courses that students can take at their own pace and are designed to transfer for credit. This summer, we're giving eligible rising high school juniors and seniors free access to 6 college-level courses. It's a great way for students to get a head start, see what college classes are really like, or try something new without the pressure.
A new survey finds that 72% of high school juniors and seniors who plan to attend college in the next 2 years feel they need to go to college to be successful, but 51% want more time to decide on a major.
Preparing for college is exciting, but can come with uncertainty. This program gives students a chance to learn at their own pace, gain confidence, and make informed choices about their future.
Learn more at sophia.org. That's Sophia with a PH.org.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey. We're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at PVA.org.
A statement came in from the Atomic Energy Commission of Israel. The devastating U.S. strike on Fordo destroyed the site's critical infrastructure and rendered the enrichment facility totally inoperable. It was devastated. We assess that the American strikes on Iran's nuclear facilities has set back Iran's ability to develop nuclear weapons for many years to come. This achievement can continue indefinitely if Iran does not get access to nuclear material, which it won't. It's so sad that that whole thing had to go. But I just want to thank our pilots. You know, they were maligned and treated very bad, demeaned by fake news CNN, which is back there, believe it or not, wasting time, wasting, and nobody's watching them. So they're just wasting a lot of time, wasting my time. And the New York Times, they put out a story that, well, maybe they were hit, but it wasn't bad. Well, it was so bad that they ended the war. It ended the war.
That was Donald Trump sort of like bulleting off as many quick examples as he could to disabuse so many in the media that are actually trying to assert that there wasn't much damage visited upon Iran's nuclear program, when clearly the antithesis is the case. He was at NATO, and he was reading a letter from Israeli officials saying that Trump set Iran's nuclear program back years. Trump then criticizes, of course, CNN and the New York Times for their reporting on it. CNN is sticking by their guns, say, oh, no, we still feel what we feel, and we're just citing this one report. But the one report took a peripheral observation, inferred it as if it were a conclusive analysis, and then accordingly passed it on. The truth is, it's not just the president who's saying this, not just Israel. It's also the IAEA, okay? Rafael Grossi has pointed out that the damage sustained is devastating. It was obliterated. But you know who else has acknowledged it? Iran! Iran Foreign Ministry spokesman Ismail Baghdadi. He pointed that out to Al Jazeera himself. Let's have a listen to that clip. Clip three, James, if you please.
Can you tell us, I'm going to insist on this a little bit more, what remains operational today as far as Iran's nuclear program?
I have nothing to add on this matter because it's a matter of a technical issue. But yes, our nuclear installations have been badly damaged, that's for sure, because it has come under repeated attacks by Israeli and American aggressors.
But it doesn't matter. CNN, The Washington Post, MSNBC, they're still citing this low confidence, quote-unquote low confidence, intel source claiming Iran's nuclear program was, quote-unquote, set back only months, not years. Now, I got to wonder, wait a minute, since the CIA director, John Radcliffe, and UN's IAEA chair, Rafael Grossi, and again, even the government of Iran, insist that the damage was extensively, quote-unquote, significant. Perhaps their politically stained sources' nonsensical assertion that everything could be rebuilt, quote-unquote, in a matter of months is a skosh off the mark. I can't believe that Iran's foreign ministry spokesperson, Ismail Baghdadi, tells Jazeera, quote, our nuclear installations have been badly damaged, that's for sure, unquote. Now, if any source had a reason to play down the damage in order to save face, and always very high priority for the Iranian regime, wouldn't it have been the very folks now telling the world, yeah, we've been badly damaged? So let me be precise. Contrary to legacy media's thirst for believing politicized, agenda-driven propaganda camouflaged as quote-unquote intelligence leaks, the damage was most assuredly significant. Even according to multiple former Democrat intelligence officials, and again, the head of the normally very friendly, Iran-friendly IAEA. I got to tell you, the Washington Post, CNN, and MSNBC are setting themselves up for the very same kind of self-invalidating humiliation they suffered when pushing the yarns of, you remember, the Trump-Russia collusion. Hunter laptop is Russian spy craft. COVID-19 came from species jumping versus lab leaks. And, of course, everybody's all-time favorite, Biden is as sharp as a tack. Good God. Anyway, I got a little indulgent there. Don't mind me. We have assisting in the opining and analyzing old friend of the show, John Gordon, national political analyst and host of the syndicated radio show, The Troop, Truth with John Gordon. And again in 2022, he was endorsed by Donald Trump for his candidacy when he was aspiring to be Georgia's attorney general. John, good to have you back. And again, thanks for sticking around. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I want to get off that for a little bit because I really did want to talk with you about this judge. This was reported on by the Daily Signal. The Supreme Court earlier issued a stay on what had been an April 18th injunction in this case known as DVD versus Department of Homeland Security. That injunction slapped restrictions on Department of Homeland Security's attempts to deport illegal aliens to countries other than their original home countries. Well, the Supreme Court has turned all that around. Trump now has the authority to do that. But still, this Judge Brian Murphy, an appointee of Biden, who was confirmed like just about a month before Trump took office, this schmuck issues an order mere hours after the Supreme Court stay. The guy comports himself as if the nation's highest court had not thrown out his initial injunction. Does this piece of crap understand that his injunction carries no legal binding merit? Your take on it, John.
Well, I think your analysis is spot on. I think that the Trump administration will follow what the Supreme Court has ruled, and that this judge will be relegated to the margins where he belongs. My frustration with all of government, you watch these guys, Ted Cruz, John Kennedy, my hero from Ohio, Jim Jordan. They all get up and they bang the table and they rail about things that are not right, and then nothing happens.
Because you need the president. You need the president to do it. It's like I was saying before. He has the right to stop the judiciary if they go rogue. In short, he can ignore any federal judge's usurpation of his branch's prerogatives by taking advantage of the court's inability to enforce it. Now, this, my friend, is a limitation deliberately designed by the authors of our Constitution. Why? To ensure that no part of the judiciary could ever morph into a tyrannical entity. That this is something that has to be understood. It has to be. Now, don't get me wrong. The president's not a king. So he can face a check against becoming a tyrannical entity as well, should he interfere with, let's say, proper judicial review in the name of protecting his separated powers. Citizens can, through Congress, either find the president's right and drop the issue, don't bother pursuing anything, or the House can find that he is the rogue actor and impeach him, thus sending the case to the Senate for trial. But here's the kicker. If it fails to reach the two-thirds votes required to trigger that expulsion or to stop the president, then the president will have won the constitutional argument in focus. And it will be as per the highest legal process in the land, and his repulsion of that alleged judicial overreach shall stand, regardless of all the sophisticated objections lawyers and judges may wish to spew over its supposed immorality. Guess what, boys and girls? That check nonetheless exists. That's the check on the judiciary, and it is constitutionally provided. You're listening to The Alan Nathan Show right here on the Main Street Radio Network. Going to be right back.
Summer can be a nonstop sprint for busy families. Between camps, road trips, and backyard barbecues, meals and snacks need to be quick, convenient, and kid-friendly. Lifestyle expert Yvette Rios has tips from the dairy aisle.
June is National Dairy Month, and dairy is a summertime lifesaver. So whether it's string cheese in a cooler, yogurt cups on the go, or even cottage cheese, these grab-and-go staples fuel kids without slowing parents down. Refrigerated doughs are another smart pick.
According to new research from the National Frozen and Refrigerated Foods Association, 77% of parents turn to dairy for convenient, kid-friendly summer solutions.
There are so many simple ways to build out a meal with dairy. Pasta salads with shredded cheese, veggie trays with ranch or sour cream dips, cottage cheese bowls topped with fruit and eggs, mornings for easy breakfast or protein-packed snacks.
To get more meal ideas and snack inspiration, visit EasyHomeMeals.com. That's EasyHomeMeals.com.
It's a well-known fact that guys often skip the doctor when they're sick and delay important health screenings. During Men's Health Month in June, encourage the men in your life to break that bad habit and take charge of their health. Vince Dorsey, a pharmacist and director of medical communications at Esperion Therapeutics, says a great way to start is with a cholesterol test.
The best defense is a good offense. High cholesterol has no symptoms. That's why it's called the silent killer. Don't put it off. Get your cholesterol tested and know your family's health history. You may not realize it, but high cholesterol can be an inherited genetic condition, putting otherwise healthy people, even in their 20s, at risk for heart disease. If you have high LDL or bad cholesterol, it is best to address this as soon as possible. There are ways to lower these levels, reducing your risk of heart attack or stroke.
If you or someone you love has high LDL cholesterol, your doctor may recommend lifestyle changes and medication to keep it in check. Visit heart.org to learn more.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
This forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and Adkin.
The ideal situation is where local law enforcement is working effectively with ICE to find these people in pretrial detention, find these people as their sentences end and they're about to be released, put detainers on them, and deport the criminals. And
they're not cooperating now, Mr. Secretary. Back then, you actually deported more people.
3 million.
They're not cooperating.
Show up the way that they show up now.
Yeah.
I mean, they're doxing these agents. They're surrounding them. I can just imagine. What would you do in this situation when your cops were surrounded?
In sanctuary cities.
I personally would talk to the mayor of New York, the mayor of Philadelphia, and the mayor of dozens of other cities
to say, you have to work with us. Don't wait for there to be a tragic incident in your city before you decide you need to work with ICE. Let's make this relationship work now.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Every year is Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. Once again, this is The Oasis for those who have an aversion to the left, right, black, white, two-dimensional approach. We're talking about these rent-a-crowds that are out there thwarting the enforcement of U.S. law because they're taking umbrage at the fact that illegal immigrants are now being held accountable for the laws they have been violating, especially when a large segment of those folks that are being deported rapidly happen to also be hardened criminals, not just folks who have merely violated immigration law. And by the way, the first time you do it, it's a misdemeanor. The second time you do it, it is a felony. It is a felony. And yet we're noticing that some judges seem to be departing from complying with the very laws they're designated to monitor and moderate. It's kind of strange. It's as if they've forgotten about the separation of powers. Why is that? Why have they forgotten about the separation of powers? And why have they forgotten that there actually is a check against the judiciary should the judiciary decide that it has the prerogative to transcend the very laws it is vested as a responsible party to moderate? Anyway, so much to get into, so little time, but let's go ahead and introduce old friend of the show, Professor Alan Dershowitz, Harvard Law School professor emeritus. He's also a lawyer. His latest book is the highly praised work entitled The Preventive State, and he's here chatting with us about the preventive measures that would be constitutionally authorized to prevent a likely disaster based on intel that's reliable but uncertain, and how questions over Trump's Iran strike fits into that. A lot of folks are saying that the president violated constitutional law. Seems a rather strange observation, given that many of his predecessors did far more with far less information. But let me introduce my guest, Professor Alan Dershowitz. Pleasure to have you back. How are you today?
You hit the nail right on the head. You got the whole analysis correct about the preventive state and about, obviously, the need for the president as commander-in-chief to have authority to act to prevent imminent and immediate dangers. And so it's not even a close question. The president has the authority as commander-in-chief to bomb Iraqi nuclear facilities, and the Congress only has the power to declare war. The president declared peace. He made an announcement saying, all right, the bombing's over now, let's have peace. So it would be absurd to think about the Congress having any authority to tell the president what to do.
No, I'm glad you brought that up, Professor.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you brought this up, because a lot of Democrats, with some Republicans, are now imbecilically claiming that Trump's removal of these three Iranian nuclear facilities actually did violate the Constitution and international law. I love that one. Now, I think this is provably untrue, since imminent threat always justifies defensive military action, whether you're talking about the Constitution or international law. And that status of imminent threat was not only confirmed by Israeli intelligence and also our own CENTCOM, General Michael Eric Kurilla, but also the very normally Iran-friendly IAEA. I mean, they all voted that Iran was in violation of the 1970s Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, and had also pointed out that these guys were only weeks away from creating 9 nuclear bombs. Now, since Iran is on record as saying, we're going to destroy the evil Satan America as soon as we can, you put that together with being within reach of 9 nuclear bombs, I would say denotatively and connotatively, that constitutes an imminent threat. Or am I being too strident, Professor?
Not at all. In fact, the framers of the Constitution originally had given Congress the power to make war, not declare war, but make war. And the father of the Constitution, James Madison, said, no, that would constrain the commander-in-chief, who was an Article II commander-in-chief, in his powers as commander-in-chief. And he insisted that the power of Congress be limited only to declarations of war. Now, that obviously is not what happened here. The president declared peace, and it was a one-off, and it was something that was necessary to prevent immediate threats. And so anybody who argues that what the president did was unconstitutional is either lying or ignorant. There's no other option. And and almost all of them are people who have Trump derangement syndrome. Anything that Trump does is wrong, and anything the Democrats do is right. These are people who didn't say a word when President Obama went into various foreign countries, when Clinton went into various foreign countries, and had boots on the ground. And they didn't say anything, even some of them didn't say anything when we basically waged a war in Iraq. And so these are just hypocrites, phonies, and people who use their alleged credentials as constitutional law scholars to mislead the American public. You know, read my book, The Preventive State. You'll see I lay out all the constitutional and legal and moral justifications for taking preventive action of the kind that was taken successfully last week.
No, it's a good point. Good observation. I mean, who could forget Obama and his attack on Libya without any go-ahead from the legislative branch? Funny how the Democrats were okay with that, isn't it? But, I mean, there's hypocrisy, and then there's hypocrisy doing a sweat-dripping pole dance. And I just don't see how the Democrats could be taken... What's that, sir?
It's hypocrisy on stilts. It's worse than just mere hypocrisy. It's hypocrisy for partisan political reasons. And, you know, we are a deeply divided country. I mean, look at what happened in New York 2 days ago. The city with the largest Jewish population of any city in the world, other than Tel Aviv, elects the most anti-Semitic mayor in the history of modern America. And they do it with 20% of the Jews voted for this thug. You know, we're such a divided country ideologically that, I worry for our future because these are the young people who are making these idiotic statements and these idiotic votes.
And, well, you know what it is, yeah. Professor? They're caught up in 2,400-year-old ancient Athenian sophistry wherein they try to say that their agenda is validated by their stated goal. And, of course, that's never the case. I mean, an agenda is never validated by its stated goal because that's the job of the agenda, to validate itself by showing how it has the properties to achieve the stated goal in whose name it's been proffered. That's the problem. We all want mom apple pie and togetherness. Here's my agenda to achieve it. If you oppose my agenda, well, then you're against mom apple pie and togetherness. No, schmuck, you've just not shown me how there's any connectivity between your agenda and the goal in whose name you've profited. It was just like with Obama's Iran nuke deal. You know, we want peace. Here's my agenda for peace. If you oppose it, you're against peace. No, I just don't think your Iran nuke deal can achieve it. Let's remember, we were giving the Iranians a 24-day heads up before we would investigate sites. Also, we allowed the Iranian government to have a secret side deal with the IAEA, wherein they would handle the soil samples given to the IAEA, the very samples upon which that agency would predicate its decision on whether or not Iran was in compliance or non-compliance with the treaty. I mean, there were so many corrupted protocols with that, but no, what do they do instead? They sell slogans. It's as if our country's become preoccupied with being slogan followers versus knowledge seekers, and that's a disconnect that's going to kill us.
No, I couldn't agree more. You're absolutely right, and that's what's happened to the state of our country. One of the reasons we need a jurisprudential framework for the preventive state is we're going to be doing more preventive actions over the years. As pandemics get worse, as international terrorism gets worse, we're going to have to take preventive actions. We're going to have to take preventive actions now to make sure that Iran doesn't use its sleeper cells to engage in terrorism against American citizens. So, you know, we're going to have to do that. And the question is, do we do it ad hoc or do we do it with a jurisprudence? And my book lays out in detail what we have to do to make sure that our prevention is done within the constraints of law rather than outside of it.
If you're just joining us, we have the pleasure of chatting with Professor Alan Dershowitz. He's put out his highly praised book entitled The Preventive State, talking about where the Constitution's role can be factored in when looking at so many of the troubles that haunt us today. I'm wondering, sir, if we don't have some solace that can be enjoyed from the fact that, as you know, the judiciary in the aggregate does not have the power to enforce its own rulings. And born out of that limitation is the president's prerogative to check that judiciary whenever it might rise to the level of, let's say, being a rogue entity. I'll tell you what, if you wouldn't mind, Professor, stay on the line for just a moment. Folks, you're listening to The Alan Nathan Show right here on the Main Street Radio Network. Going to be right back.
Planning a summer road trip? You're not alone. Over 75% of Americans are hitting the road this season. But before you pack the snacks and playlists, make sure your car and your car insurance are road trip ready. Start with a full vehicle checkup. Brakes, oil, tires, wipers. Pack an emergency kit. Learn how to change a tire and bring a backup map because GPS is not always reliable out there. Understanding your coverage is important as well. Although many people think they understand their insurance, a recent survey found 96% of drivers misunderstood at least one part of their policy. And that's where the General can help. With our app, you can review your policy, file a claim fast, or get a quote in 2 minutes or less. At the General, our mission is to give people a break when they need it most. And that's why we've made managing your car insurance easier, faster, and smoother, so you can stay focused on the road ahead. Planning a trip? Visit thegeneral.com so you can hit the road with confidence.
With the cost of living rising dramatically, budgets are tight and customers are looking for ways to stretch their dollars. T-Mobile has launched two new experience plans, adding industry-leading value and savings, plus a 5-year price guarantee, so customers can rest assured that the price of their talk, text, and data stays the same. The Experience Beyond plan includes over $200 in added value for every line every month, with satellite connectivity, yearly device upgrades, and an entertainment streaming bundle that includes Apple TV+, Hulu, Netflix, and more. For more information, visit T-Mobile.com, sponsored by T-Mobile.
National Iced Tea Day is just around the corner, and it's the perfect time to celebrate everyone's favorite summertime beverage. As a tea sommelier, I'm always looking for tea products with high-quality ingredients that are sourced responsibly. When it comes to a bottled tea, my go-to is Tea Java. It's brewed in small batches using quality tea leaves from Java, Indonesia. No sugar, no calories, and no added preservatives. Just a refreshing, authentic tea like I brewed it myself. Tea Java is a must-have this summer. You can learn more at teajava.com.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm going to keep ticking. But no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times, when we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while? Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart and don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. For help keeping yours at a healthy range, text PRESSURE to 97779. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
You know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school feels a lot like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly, everything just clicks. Getting on that path may be easier than you think. A good place to start? Go to findsomethingnew.org. At findsomethingnew.org, you have access to resources that help develop new skills. Skills that will position you for careers in today's growing industries. From healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Plus, you can take advantage of online courses, certification programs, apprenticeships, and more. So you can take yourself from unemployed and uncertain to empowered and prepared for what's next. Find your path to a new career today. Visit findsomethingnew.org. A message from the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment. This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all gotta help each other right now.
We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're going to be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Every year is Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. Once again, this is the Oasis for those who have an aversion to the left, right, black, white, two-dimensional approach. Delighted you can stick around with us. We just had the pleasure of chatting with Professor Alan Dershowitz, obviously famously from Harvard Law, an iconic legal mind, a legendary figure in our nation, lifelong Democrat. He's finally left the Democratic Party because the party pretty much left all the principles that it once held. I also left the Democratic Party years ago. I'll never be a Republican, but I don't know what the hell's happened with these guys. They are out of their ever-loving minds. They have not even a passing familiarity with what they used to stand for. That said, we were on the discussion of this grotesque misapplication of law as it relates, first of all, to whether or not the president had the authority to protect this country from an imminent threat, as was the case when he dropped bombs on the nuclear facilities in Iran, or B, needed to be at the mercy of Congress first giving the go-ahead, which is nonsensical because by the time such a go-ahead could be rendered, we could no longer be a republic because we would be in severely marginalized. I don't think that we would ever be taken out by Iran, but if they could launch a nuclear intercontinental ballistic missile against us, they could do a lot of harm. Even if we could turn around and erase them off the planet, if we could avoid losing millions of people, why the hell not? All that notwithstanding, we additionally find ourselves preoccupied with rogue judges, the 677 some odd district judges who believe that in the name of the Constitution, they get to violate it because they're doing so under the trappings of officialdom. I mean, there are points where you have black letter law saying that they cannot interfere with the president, but they're still trying to do so. And they've been batted down a number of times by the Supreme Court. And I want to share with you this piece off the Daily Signal by one Tyler O'Neill. The headline is Judicial Insurrection Breaks New Ground as Judge Defies Supreme Court Itself. District court judges aren't just striking down President Donald Trump's orders, arguably taking presidential power on themselves. In at least one case, a district judge appears to have openly defied the Supreme Court itself. The Supreme Court Monday issued a stay on an April 18 injunction in a case known as DVD versus Department of Homeland Security. That injunction slapped restrictions on DHS's attempts to deport illegal aliens to countries other than their original home countries. Yet Judge Brian Murphy, an appointee of President Joe Biden, confirmed by the Senate less than a month before Trump took office, issued an order mere hours after the Supreme Court stay, acting as though the nation's highest court had not thrown out his initial injunction. Now, it goes on and on and on, but I mean, that's pretty much the headline. Those are the top excerpts you need to hear. You have a judge who, in a very on-point fashion, not only disregards the Constitution on point, but also on point, disregards what the Supreme Court said the Constitution should permit or should be understood as permitting. So the highest court in the land is now being disobeyed by a lower court, and yet the executive is supposed to find that lower court's injunction more binding than the Supreme Court's ruling? No. You have a judiciary here that is clearly in need of some strong parental assistance. And I want to remind everybody that every president has the unassailable, albeit sometimes perilous, constitutional option to use the functionality and mechanics of his branch's own separated powers. And he can use it to leverage his check against any time he believes there has been an unconstitutional encroachment upon those powers by any component of the judiciary, be it district, appellate, or even the Supreme Court. And by the way, he can do so even as the dispute in focus makes its way through the appellate process. And this is especially relevant to time-sensitive issues when even an eventually favorable decision for the president could actually be moot. Why? Because of a lower court's flawed ruling, perhaps having caused irrevocable damage. So guess what? Yeah, the president can ignore any federal judge's usurpation of his branch's prerogatives by taking advantage of the court's inability to enforce it. They can't enforce it. And spare me the crap about the marshal's office, because anybody they might get at the marshal's office to try to enforce what they did would be working for somebody who works for somebody who can be fired by the president. All right? So forget it. Just doesn't work that way. So, yeah, he can ignore any federal judge's usurpation of his branch's prerogatives by taking advantage of the court's inability to enforce it. And that's a limitation, by the way, deliberately designed by the authors of our Constitution. Why? To ensure that no part of the judiciary could ever morph into a tyrannical entity. Because, again, contrary to popular understanding, the judiciary is never the final arbiter over whether or not it has usurped another branch's powers. Otherwise, when you think about it, it could potentially rule that it has the actionable authority to oversee the military's operations instead of the president. Or how about initiate legislation instead of Congress? We just so rule. No, it doesn't work that way. The president can stop him. Now, again, the president's not a king. So he also faces a check against becoming a tyrannical entity should he interfere with, again, proper judicial review in the name of protecting his separated powers. All right, the House can find that he maybe is the rogue actor and impeach him and send the case to the Senate for trial. But guess what? If it fails to reach the two-thirds vote required to trigger that stopping of the president, well, then the president will have won the constitutional argument in focus. Okay? And that's regardless of all the sophisticated objections lawyers and judges may wish to spew over its supposed immorality. Too bad, as wipes. That check nonetheless exists. And it makes sense, because after all, just as no person can be a judge in his own trial, nor can the judiciary be the final adjudicator when its own branch happens to be one of the two litigants regarding a separation of powers dispute. So for those of you screaming, oh, my stars, and maybe, I don't know, succumbing to the vapors, embrace some rudiments, okay? Each branch has certain absolute powers beyond the reach of the other two. Okay? And the reason for this is to ensure that each may leverage against the other, or others, the checks and balances and reciprocal checks and balances required to maintain and protect their respective allocated authorities. So, yeah. The Supreme Court has final ruling over the constitutionality of a given argument. However, when assessing whether it has possibly encroached upon another branch's authorities, it provably does not have the final say. Otherwise, this constitutional solution to the quandary would be absent. Okay? Okay. You're listening to The Alan Nathan Show right here on the Main Street Radio Network.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.